I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Jay Cross.
Hello, Mark.
And Joe Branton.
Hello.
Blimey, that's loud. No Matt Knight this evening.
Who?
He's actually dissolved, like Alex Mack style, into a puddle of stress.
Mud. Oh.
He's actually dissolved into the band Puddle of Mud.
Yes.
Right.
And
great band.
That's why he can't be here.
I saw Puddle of Mud once. I saw them in
year
2002. Which some of our younger listeners may not remember that year.
We don't have young listeners.
Do we not?
No.
Okay.
This is a podcast.
Oh, okay.
It's not YouTube.
No, podcast is...
No.
Young people love the podcast, mate.
No, they don't.
They do. They love it.
Anyway, I saw Puddle of Mud in 2002 at the London Docklands Arena, which isn't there anymore. And they were supporting Korn when I saw Korn on the Untouchables tour. Puddle of Mud, not so good.
Korn, unsurprisingly.
Korn, pretty good, which is contrary to the footage that I saw of them playing Reading and Leeds last weekend. Not
very good
at all. It just wasn't... I mean, it's just no David Silveira.
I mean...
Who's David Silveira?
It was the drummer in Korn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Coincidentally, earlier on, I watched the video for Revolving Door by Crazy Town, which is...
I didn't know they had any other songs.
They had another song. The lyrics go, and this may, you know, this won't come into play with a quiz that we're doing later on, but we are doing a lyric-based quiz later. The lyrics to Revolving Door are, "Ladies come, ladies go through my revolving door. Some never come back, but most come back for more." And the video is horrendous. And the reason I was thinking about it is because the guitar player was a PRS player. And I think he played SEs. And they made a big deal over the fact that they were like, he's a five-string guitarist.
What?
He's a five-string guitarist.
Right.
He just didn't put the high E on because he just didn't need it. That was like part of the advertising campaign. It was rubbish, basically.
Wait, who was advertised? PRS?
Yeah. But no, maybe it wasn't PRS. Maybe it was Schecter. It was someone.
But what the guitar company was saying.
Yeah, they were like,
"Mate, listen, I tell you what, our guitars work with five strings as well."
Yeah. And it was just a normal guitar, just it didn't have the top E string. It's rubbish. Yeah, so if you want a big nostalgia hit, go and check out Crazy Town's Revolving Door. It's very bad.
Did that have a sample as well? Because the big song, Butterfly,
was
a Red Hot Chili Peppers sample.
I think it might be a sample, but...
Was that their gig?
Video is so garish and the lyrics are so hideously offensive that your brain won't even bother to try and work out what you're listening to.
Right, okay.
It is awful. Anyway, so that's a little bit of homework for the listeners. Loads of stuff going on this week. Matt is not here. Like I said, he's devolved into a kind of puddle of stress.
He was very stressed the last time I saw him.
He's been running his boss event, which we've talked about. I don't want to talk about it too much because we've talked about it a lot on the previous podcast.
But
we've talked about it quite a bit.
Okay.
But just to say that it is still running. If you want to head down to House of Vans in London,
The it runs until this Sunday, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. The exhibition is very, very
great.
Interesting.
I think I actually saw a number of podcast listeners there and possibly chatted with them as well.
You can't remember?
No.
Cannot remember?
No.
Loads of interesting stuff. The first ever Boss pedal, which, well, it's not even a pedal really, it's like an acoustic preamp you stick onto your guitar.
When it was called The Boss.
The Boss, yeah. And what else was cool? All of the Space Echoes, mm-hmm. one of which is
Thank
yours.
You very much. They couldn't have done it without me.
Indeed.
The synth guitar, that was pretty rad.
Yeah, the well, there's a number of synth guitars. There's
I meant the original one, the 78 thing that we spoke about last week.
Yeah, the GR and GS500.
Yeah.
But there's also a G707, which is the weird one that's got the handle that runs the
that
whole
was
length
cool.
of the neck.
They had the bass version of that as well. The pedal boards for those look absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, they're huge.
So wonderfully 80s.
Yeah. So, yeah, loads of stuff on display. Do every Boss compact pedal as well in chronological order.
Yeah, it's great. I loved the museum side of it.
Do you know what I was thinking? What they should have done, and I'm not sure the logistics of this, but imagine if that whole exhibition, the exhibition is in a long hallway. What if the pedals, they'd just done one side by side and it ran the entire length of the exhibition, like guiding you through? That would have been cool. Maybe I'll tell Matt that. I'll go, I enjoyed it, Matt.
It was okay, but
I've got a couple of ideas on how you could have made it better, I reckon. I don't think he'd appreciate it.
I don't think he'd appreciate it, I've got to be honest.
Very much at all. But you played. How was the Saturday? Because I wasn't there.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, well, on Friday was good because it was like a private party thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you were there.
We shot some video.
I shot some video.
Yes, you were involved, I remember. And yeah, that was good. But it was just a nice little kind of get together for opening night. But Saturday was the big gig.
There was music on the Friday as well. There was Zane Carney was headlining.
Who I didn't. He's just like a session guy, right?
He plays for Avril Lavigne and used to play for
John Mayer.
Your favourite musical act, John Mayer.
Oh, I've only recently realised that I detest John Mayer more than anything in the world. I'm going to do the whole Branton Rant on season two. It's just going to be
John Mayer rants. Let's not go into that because there is a John Mayer focused quiz towards the end of this segment before we dive into news.
The only thing that I know about John Mayer, the only song that I know is the one that people would play in the shop all the time. And I only know the beginning because it goes, Squee-doo-doo-doo. Pew-doo-doo. Squee-doo-doo-doo. And then there's like another bit.
I mean, that's basically every sort of like slow R&B song ever.
Yeah.
It goes
Squidoo-dee-doo.
He is the Ipswich of musicians.
Anyway, let's not get too heavy into John Mayer because there will be a Mayer focused quiz coming down the pipe, but probably in the next 10-15 minutes.
Oh, wonderful. The Saturday was really good. Yeah. So my band played. We opened. Polymath opened, and then Dorje, which is Rob Chappers and Rabia Massad's band, they played, and then Terra Melos, which is Nick Reinhardt's band. So that was incredible, and we got to hang out with him quite a lot. I really, really enjoyed that. And then This Will Destroy You headlined, so you know, sort of like big wall of soundy post rock to sort of finish the night. But I thought all the music was great. It was absolutely packed. Like,
I bet there's one band that wasn't that good. So,
yeah, I think there was. But there was a. It was like a.
I mean,
yeah,
you.
Thousand, yeah, I know you did. There was like it was like sold out, 1,000 cap venue.
Really?
Which is really, really good.
I didn't get there in time to see you.
No,
so
you did.
It was 999.
Oh, you had such a wonderful, wonderfully lame excuse.
I was just running late.
Yeah.
This is all it came down to. I went to the Natural History Museum.
You were in London?
Yeah. Yeah. We stayed at a hotel together the night before.
And then I went into London and I went and met my girlfriend and we had a really nice day. We went to the Natural History Museum and then we went out for some dinner and then I just lost track of time and I just... And you went on early.
Yeah, we did go on a little earlier, yeah.
Doors, they were like, get this out of the way.
Yeah, we were on
but
like
what I'm trying to say is it wasn't, just, you know, hold your horses. It wasn't sold out when you were playing.
Yeah, right, okay.
Just there was one person
off. At least one person.
But yeah, it was really good. I thought Matt did an excellent job. The bands were all, like, great, and I thought it was a really good showcase of all the gear that was there. I mean, on a little side, we were also raising money for a friend of ours who's got like a brain tumor thing. And we raised like 450 quid for that because I did I spoke about it during the set and people were very, very generous afterwards. So that was really cool. So I think Matt did an excellent job. It was an excellent showcase. What a wonderful event. And it's still going on now. I'm going back up there on Saturday.
So if you want to catch Joey B stumbling around the museum part, then...
I think Katie Tunce was doing a thing up there, so I'm going to go up and see some Lupin on Saturday. Nice. That's going to be cool.
Cool.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
So part of this weekend, I guess, has been that Nick Reinhardt has been in town primarily for this the Boss event, but also to do some stuff at your local neighbourhood guitar shop, the GAK. Joby, what did this involve?
Where are we? Oh, yeah, Nick Reinhardt. Yeah, so it was...
Hello?
Did you just have a meltdown?
Yeah, a little. I'm still recovering. I drank...
It was an event. Solidly. It was an event that that Joe put together.
We're talking about that.
It was an event that Joe put together that worked out really well because I'm taking over now because it's a Fender related event.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Let a professional speak about it.
Nick Reinhardt was kind of the face of the Mustang GT release, which Fender released earlier this year, and it just worked out really well because coincidentally, whilst Nick was over, Rick Hines, who is the Fender amp specialist who's based in the US, also happened to be over the same week. So Joe was able to get the perfect storm together, and both Nick and Rick were in the in GAC at the same time, and it was really cool. And we got a little bit of a backstory behind what went on in the production of the amp that I thought was really interesting. So Rick and the team built the amp and then basically went to Nick and went, here you go, mate, try and break this, because they wanted it to be an amp that pedal people could use and get behind. And you know, apparently it took Nick about half an hour to break it.
Okay, nice.
Because what he did was he wanted to know what would happen if you put five like ring mods.
No, it was pitch shifters.
Pitch shifters. He wanted to know
to
if you could put
how many pitch shifters,
how many pitch shifters you could stack. And he got to five, and then the amp started to make a horrible feedback sound. And apparently, looking to see how many pitch shifters you can put on an amp isn't something that people generally... look to test,
I guess.
Weirdly, but yeah, he. So they, you know, they got around that problem. There was a few other things that that Nick helped him out with, and it was really cool. Just getting a bit of a backstory behind that whole thing, and then they had a bit of a jam. And Nick is a very, very weird guitar player who likes really weird sounds, and Rick is more of a kind of conventional.
I actually thought
player.
That worked really well because they were able to do a bit of both. They, like, Rick was able to be there for the people who wanted a good sound.
Who wanted to
amp.
Hear what the amp sounded like.
Yeah, but yeah, if you wanted to hear what the amp sounded like, it was great because Rick put on some like tasteful reverb and sort of a nice like slightly breaking up sort of Princeton style sound, and he played some tasteful blues, and that was great, and it really showcased how nice the amp can sound and how well the amp can imitate sort of a valve amp. And then you had Nick there who, and what I thought was really cool is Nick was because he had his mobile synced with the amp, he was able to like download his tones that he was using the night before at the gig,
okay,
and was able to like show like one of his weird pitch shift tremoloed sort of sound effects that, you know, he uses in the actual sort of Terra Mellis.
Is he using those amps live then?
No, he's not using them live, but it was like, you know, he called up a thing that was a mix, and he played a very well-known part from like a Terra Mellis track that has those effects on, and it sounded like, you know.
So he'd recreated his live stuff in the GT software.
Exactly. And it was cool, like Nick was sort of looking at other artist patches, like there's a Grimes one on there at the moment, you know, Grimes?
Sure.
No, you don't, do you?
No.
Okay, so
I do know who she is.
Yeah,
actually,
okay, fine. So, you know, even she'd designed like a patch, which was like a more sort of a textural sort of soundscapey thing than, you know, something to help you playing. But Nick like called that up and then was like, right, let's look at what Grimes made, because you can then go into the patch and see how they've built it, and was going through everything. So it was great for Nick to go into so much detail and really to demonstrate how much detail you can go into. You can be a pedal nerd with this amp, which costs less than £200. That's pretty cool. I mean, I did this event to get Nick Reinhardt into the shop. I did not care about a sub £200 practice amp.
Really? You've never expressed that opinion before?
But it was really, really good.
Okay, interesting. So, plenty of people came yeah. to check it out.
Yeah, yeah, it was great. I almost didn't hire enough chairs, so it was it was great. It was the shop was packed out. That was fantastic. I was really, really hungover, and I hadn't had enough sleep, so I'm sure it's fine.
Yeah, I'm sure it probably was. Yeah. Good stuff, good stuff. So some other things to kind of talk about this week. Brand new video up on the Guitar Nerds channel. The weirdest pedals you can buy right now. You and Matty did this in the form of a kind of Guitar Nerds show, plugged in some pedals. What did you plug in?
We were looking through our massive pedal collection. We were thinking of, like, how can we get a few together? Like, what sort of things do we have? We were trying to put them all into... like, oh, here are all the reverbs we have, here are all the delays. And there were, like, a few things that were just outside of everything, and we decided to put those all together in one video. So we had, from Australia, we had Medor Electronics, their Hurt circuit, which is a fuzz, which sounds conventional, but the fuzz has, like, a like this weird tunable oscillation, so you can, like, it will give you, like, a high-pitched beep.
Okay.
On a rotary control that you can move the pitch, but also somehow, and I don't know how this works, it also responds to your volume. So when you have that engaged, rather than your volume turning the signal up and down, it recognizes that the signal is either that volume is to it is getting louder or more quiet, and it changes the pitch either up or down.
Okay.
So you have
So the pitch is just controlling the.
The volume,
the volume controlling the pitch, basically.
Yeah, which is crazy, which is amazing.
So what? When you turn the volume
down, the pitch drops. It doesn't. The volume does not drop, but the pitch drops.
That doesn't make sense. The volume has to drop.
It does not.
Because you turn the volume down on your guitar.
When you turn it off, it makes a difference, but it's like it's compensating.
Hang on. You turn the volume down on your guitar.
Yes.
And so the.
And
but when you do that, you're limiting the signal that's coming out of your guitar.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the volume stays the same on
the pedal. I don't know how it does it, but it does it.
I've no clue.
I don't understand.
Watch Matt Knight do it in the video. Watch him move the volume.
It's not the tone.
It's the volume. 100% it's the volume.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds like I've got to watch a Guitar Nerds video for once.
Yeah, yeah, unbelievable.
I did ask Matt how it was possible, and he replied to me, magic.
Okay.
But yeah, that was really cool. I really loved the Hurt circuit. It's like a super weird, like super gated, kind of like unusable fuzz.
Okay.
It was great. Like, I saw some of the comments, people being like, oh, you know, the fuzz doesn't sound great. And I was like, well, you're probably thinking of like old school fuzz. This is a very, very new school thing, I think. You know. It's just people not getting it. It was a great tool. Then we also had the Walrus Audio, the Luminary, which was like in the vein of sort of Electro-Harmonic's recent foray into sort of organ-like things. So it was like a multi-pitch based thing. So it allowed you to bring in like six different pitches and create a...
Yeah, it's like it's like the Pog, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a way more complicated Pog that allowed you to do some really super cool, super interesting and broad things with it. So that was really super cool. And the last one was, I guess you can't do weird effects without talking about Earthquaker.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if the Data Corruptor had come out at the time we were doing this, we'd have put the Data Corruptor in there, but... this was the Transmissor, which is their reverb. And the reason we chose to do the Transmissor is because it's reverb's so super topical at the moment. Like, you know, Strymon have made people really care about reverb, and certainly Boss, you know, as well, releasing their RV500s. It's a very topical, like, high-quality reverb. It's what everyone wants, but it's also become very, very conventional.
Yeah.
Everyone's trying to make the reverb sound exactly the same. And this was... they could almost have not called it a reverb. They could have called it, I don't know, like a soundscape device. Because you have like a...
That's kind of all their pedals though, isn't it?
Yeah,
every single one could be a soundscape device.
I guess so. But it's got like an expression out for you to control the filter, which brings like a sort of a washed pitch or like almost a phase sound that you can control manually over the top of the reverb.
Okay.
Which sounds so bizarre, doesn't it? And that was the whole idea of this video, was we were picking three things that were absolutely bonkers. And to be honest, it was partially because we wanted to put them all together and see what we could make from them, which we do in the video. But yeah, they were great. Actually, I think this is since the last podcast. Had I met Jamie Stillman on the last podcast?
No, that is since the last. Yeah,
Jamie Stillman, the guy who owns and runs Earthquaker Devices, came down to... came down to GAK the other day. So
anywhere else?
Sorry?
Did he go anywhere else?
No.
Oh, okay.
If he did,
you don't
it
care.
Was probably somewhere completely not very good.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Mm.
Somewhere really overrated. But no, he was great. Yeah, he came down and we had a bit of a chat about all his pedals, which is funny because him and Nick know each other quite well. Him, Nick, and Juan Aldrete play in an improvisational band for Earthquaker Day, which is a yearly celebration.
They do like a little convention, don't they, basically?
Yeah, and yeah, Nick, Juan, and Jamie Stillman plays drums for them. They play like improvisational sort of soundscapes at Earthquaker Day, which is super cool. No one's ever filmed any of it, so no one's seen it.
They're not allowed.
Yeah, whatever. So, but that was really cool, sort of meeting Jamie Stillman and talking about all the weird pedals that, you know, he's done over the years and why he does what he does and what's led him to sort of do what he does. Yes.
Cool. Good stuff. Before we move on to this week's news, there is something that we should talk about. Joe Branton, today on Facebook, you put up some beef with a certain guitar player who we've mentioned a couple times already this episode, Mr. John Mayer.
Oh, God. I tell you, it's because I had to do nothing but listen to people talk about John Mayer at this Boss event because Zane Carney was there, who used to be John Mayer's
guitarist. And this has inspired some...
And then it was on today in my office, and I was just like, this is awful. This is awful. Like, I think I got stuck in a conversation at the Boss thing with Mary Spender and Zane Carney about John Mayer.
Who both love John Mayer.
Yeah, and I was looking for some rope by the end. It was horrible.
So, inspired by your rant, I went to go and listen to some John Mayer, which I've not done much of. And I always assumed, because all the stuff I've heard of his, I think it's been in like demo videos or like here's a video about his Fender Strat or whatever, and it's always kind of bluesy, traditionally bluesy. I didn't realise like how easy listening John Mayer actually is. It's like
Muzak.
It's like my mum would listen to that, you know, like pop, middle of the road pop.
You not like music? John Mayer's for you.
Our listenership has just dropped by maybe 50%.
Great,
isn't it?
Perfect. I don't.
I've never listened to him. Other than hearing people play him, I don't know what he sounds like.
Well, that's perfect.
He did that Body Wonderland thing. You know, it sounds like a Radox advert, but it's apparently an actual song.
The song's called Your Body is a Wonderland.
Okay.
So, what I've devised is a game called, that I'm tentatively calling, Mayer or M-O-R.
What? that doesn't even make sense.
Mayer... or right. more.
What is more? What is Mora?
Middle of the road.
Oh, middle of the road.
M O R. Middle of the road. Mayer or more?
That's motto.
M O R is.
M O R is a genre.
M O R is a genre.
Yeah, middle of the road, like the Eagles and stuff like that.
M O R and A O R.
Or more importantly,
ASMR.
ASMR.
I'm taking it in the British sense of, let's say, people like Desiree or Gabrielle. And I noticed the similarity between Mr. Mayer's lyrics and those of, let's say, for example, Gabrielle, in that they're pretty lightweight, kind of meaningless, and are very middle of the road. So what I've devised is a short game called Mayer or M-O-R, where basically I've got six sets of lyrics and you have to tell me, is this a John Mayer song or is this from the canon of, think about 90s middle of the road.
Okay, all right, I'm ready.
So the first one, who's going to go first? Wait, in fact, you can both say whether
do
you
buzz
think,
in.
You no, you can both say whether you think this is John Mayer or someone from the genre of M.O.R. So, someday I'll fly, someday I'll soar, someday I'll be so damn much more, because I'm bigger than my body gives me credit for, because I'm bigger than my body now. Is that Mayer or more?
That that can't be a John Mayer lyric.
Yeah,
I think that's a 90s pop song.
Unfortunately, you're both wrong. That is Bigger Than My Body by John Mayer.
No. That...
Okay.
That sounds like a Christina Aguilera lyric.
Moving on. He left you black and blue without a word of explanation, and he took your love for granted, and he left you high and dry. But you know someday, when you'll wonder what you see in him anyway, when that day arrives, we'll live on.
Jesus Christ, that is some of
it. It sounds quite dark.
Wettest.
That sounds, well, that doesn't sound.
That's one of the more weighty ones of the quiz.
That sounds like a song right. about like domestic abuse. That doesn't right. sound.
I mean, he seems like that sort of guy. I'm going to go Mayer.
Joe's going Mayer. Well, by that, you mean someone who would sing about this sort of issue.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what you meant. Right, good.
I don't think that's John Mayer.
That lyric is The Lighthouse Family, Ocean Drive by Lighthouse Family. Yep, indeed.
Okay.
Next up, number three.
That, I tell you what, okay, that's a good song.
That is a good song.
Ocean Drive is a great song.
Great, I've never heard it.
Ocean Drive.
All right, next one.
Number three.
No, I...
Sometimes,
so true.
Sometimes
the sun's gonna shine over everything that you do.
Oh God, why am I here?
Number three. Sometimes
the sky.
Shut up. Sometimes
so blue.
Sometimes I get to thinking while you are far away, just how much I miss you and how time ticks away. So sad when we are fighting, too much tension, too much hate. Sometimes I need reminding before it gets too late. Just one moment in my day. Take me up to a place so far in your heavenly space. Is that Mayer or
that
Moore?
That has to be Mayer, because that's so wet. It's exactly the sort of lightweight... we've got a clean rating on this podcast.
Rhyming lightweight couplets. Music. There's a lot of rhyming. God. There's a lot of rhyming.
I can't imagine being as pointless as this man.
Joe Branton, you're saying... you're saying Mayer, Jay?
I think I'm going to say John Mayer as well.
That song was actually One Night, Oh, One Night in Heaven by M People.
I saw M People. I've seen M People twice on two consecutive days.
Right.
When this is a very weird story, I was probably just over 20 years ago. My family went on holiday to the Alton Towers Hotel for a weekend, and my parents booked it like a year in advance. And in the run up to it, they got a phone call from Alton Towers being like, "Oh, someone's actually booked out the entire park for a weekend. You guys can still be there, but just know there's going to be, it's a bit corporate. There'll be some bands playing and stuff."
You know who it was?
It was BT, because your dad was there.
My dad was there, and one of our other mates.
Yeah, I do know that, yeah.
Oh, where was that?
It turned out that the entertainment that they had, the light entertainment, was M People, Status Quo played, Madness played. I saw them 2 days running. It was great.
Number four. "Now, if we had the power to bring our neighbours home from war, they would have never missed a Christmas, no more ribbons on their door. And when you trust your television, what you get is what you got. Because when they own the information, oh, they can bend it all they want."
That can't be Mayer.
Is that Mayer or Moore?
It can't be Mayer, because the finish of that lyric is almost left wing.
Is it Mayer or Moore?
In Moore.
Jay Cross?
I'm going to go with John Mayer.
Jay Cross, you're correct. That is John Mayer. That is Waiting for the World to Change. Waiting on the World to Change by John Mayer. Let's do number five.
All right.
"Everybody wants to know the truth. In my arms is the only proof." "I've hidden my heart behind the bedroom door. Now it's open. I can't do no more." Is that Mayer or Moore?
"I've hidden my heart behind the bedroom door.
Why is he hidden it
now
there?
It's open, I can't do no more."
Yeah, he's opened the door, he's saying sense. Come in.
But the door,
it's behind the door.
Yeah, but he's
got
it.
A severed heart behind the door.
What he's saying is his heart is in the bedroom.
Yeah.
The door's open, come on in.
What, she's going to...
Or is it a he?
Who knows? I think that's John Mayer. I think he slipped it there.
Yeah, fine, it's John Mayer.
So you're going Mayer?
I'm going Mayer.
Unfortunately, that is "Would I Lie to You, Baby? Would I Lie to You?" Okay. By Charles and Eddie.
Fair.
Right, last one, number six.
All right.
"Something about the way the hair falls in your face. I love the shape you take when crawling towards the pillowcase.
Oh my word.
Jesus, you tell me where to go, and though I might leave to find it, I'll never let your head hit the bed without my hand behind it."
That's so rank.
I really don't want this to be Mayer because I'm definitely John Mayer. Hate him more. Please don't. I'm going to go more because I don't want this to be John Mayer.
It's John Mayer.
Oh, God.
That's from your buddy,
Is
It Wonderland.
Who is buying this?
Now, I wasn't keeping score. Wasn't keeping score because that was all just a bit of fun. But I think we've all learned that John Mayer
is awful.
Is quite a creepy man.
Human being.
Let's dive headfirst into a big old barrel of
questions.
That's the news.
News.
Let me bring up the news. It's on a different
email. So the news. First off, I'm going first off.
Okay, do it.
Slash has got a new signature model. Topical guitarist Slash.
This is Gibson. the latest Gibson. What's he called now? An ambassador
he
for the brand
or
something?
That was going to be part of the news. Of course, last year he was made the international.
That was this year.
Oh, earlier this year he was made Gibson's international brand ambassador, which is wonderful. And to celebrate,
do you think if they've got him on the payroll, they don't have to pay him as much when they make a guitar?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
But this is actually quite cool because
there's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
First time kind of ever, Slash has got a guitar that's not a Les Paul.
Is it the first time ever?
Well, you know, whatever. But
someone was asking in the Facebook group earlier if we could do a deep dive, like some of the other podcasts. Do pick a real specific topic and do a deep dive. And I was like, well, that implies that we actually know something that we're talking about.
But actually, what we're really good at is saying things that we don't know with a lot of authority.
Conviction.
That's how it works.
Anyway, this is cool. So Slash has got Firebird. This is pretty cool. Like, Slash has always been a Les Paul guy. I guess, you know, the only other signature models I'm aware of that he had were those, the Epiphone, the Les Paul. They weren't even juniors, were they? What were they?
Oh, the outfit. The Slash
special
outfit.
Yeah. They were just like, and they were specials.
I mean, he's also had pedals and amps and stuff.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about guitars.
I am talking about guitars. But okay. These are quite cool. So he's got two custom shop signature model Firebirds. Now they are going to be super high end and super rare, so I think they're two different finishes, and they're only making 25 of each,
$7,500.
Well, $1,700 for the more expensive, which is a relict, lightly relict trans white, and
it looks amazing.
$6,200 for a trans black, which looks terrible.
It looks like a PRS.
So, yeah, the trans black is it, for listeners. The trans black is like really like, you know, that dentisty premium dentist-y quilted top thing that PRS go for. That's what the black one is. It's like really yeah, but it's got that. Don't play this.
The white one. The white one looks fantastic.
Yeah, light relict. Like, and it's a trans white, so it's kind of like a bit like Olympic white for Fender. It's a slightly off white. It looks fantastic, and he's got, because he already has his own signature set of Seymour Duncan humbuckers that go in his Les Paul. So it's got those pickups in. So same pickups, you know, same switching options that you would get in a Les Paul. I guess that's no different from a Firebird anyway. But yeah, the lightly relic trans white or the very, very unrelic dentisty trans black. Hugely expensive, super rare, but actually really nice guitars, like, yeah, more than anything. Like, I don't really care about Slash or his playing style, but these are great guitars. If Gibson announced like a relic trans white Firebird,
you'd be like, yes.
I'd be like, yes, this is great. So if you're not into Slash, I guess you'd almost overlook it, but don't. This is a fantastic looking guitar.
Yeah, yeah. Again, you know, and we've talked about it, you know, they're a lot of money, but they are clearly a collector's thing, and like a, you know, a high-end custom shop thing.
Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely. Super cool. Go, so, check them out.
Obviously, we talked a bit about the Boss 40th anniversary celebrations, but there have also been two new products to join in the fun. First up, the JB2.
Yeah, the Angry Driver.
Yeah, which in our video, I realised I called it the Angry Charlie.
Oh, the Angry Charlie is the JHS pedal.
I know, yeah. And I say, I'm the new Boss Angry Charlie, which is a combination of a Boss Blues Driver and a JHS Angry Charlie.
Oh, very good.
You know, I'm off to.
I shouldn't be saying this. I actually messed it up. I was going to make a funny joke and call it the Baby Driver, after
like that
film.
Movie, yeah.
But I got confused. I couldn't remember which one was the right one, and I said Angry Driver, thinking that's the name of the film. Wasn't the name of the film. No, it's the name of the. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
But there is a movie called Drive Angry.
There is Drive Angry.
Is that a Nick Cage movie?
I think it might be, actually. Did Matt Nutt name this product? He loves Nick Cage.
He
was like, yeah, we're calling it Angry Driver.
Yeah, so this is a collaboration pedal between JHS and Boss, as Mark says. And it looks really interesting. So you've got concentric pots for the three main controls, which are level, tone and drive. And then you've got a fourth control, which allows you to switch between the different modes of the pedal. And the way that it's set up is very interesting. And I was talking to one of the guys from Boss about this on the evening, and just about how it all works. So you can have either the JHS or the Boss side on their own. You can then have the JHS into the Boss or the Boss into the JHS. You can then have how many modes is that? I've lost count.
Wait,
was that four?
That was four.
And then you've also got parallel mode. That's it. Yeah, there's five modes, isn't there?
Yeah,
yeah, five modes.
So one
no, is six mode. What the hell?
So there's two different series modes.
Yeah, and then yeah, you can
so
run...
yeah, so one. So hang on.
So you've got, so you can run
just the Angry,
just the Angry Charlie,
Charlie,
just the Blues Driver,
the modified Blues Driver,
the Blues Driver into the Angry Charlie, yeah, the Angry Charlie into the Blues Driver,
and then parallel.
And then parallel, that's five.
My favourite one is being able to switch. So there's a mode where the pedal doesn't switch off. So instead you get a blue or a red LED.
This will be the other mode.
Oh, that's the other mode.
Yeah, and you can have one or the other, but you can't turn it off, which is great, because what we were doing was like setting the Blues Driver up as like a preamp, like low gain, and then being able to switch into the Angry Charlie, right, like as a big fat drive. So you can... use it like as a preamp and drive pedal in one.
Gotcha.
I think the parallel mode is the most interesting, because what you've got there is you've got the two drives running concurrently. You're not stacking. You're not going one into the other.
Yeah.
You're running them at the same time and then combining that sound at the end. And myself and Mark Harley, who is a product specialist at Boss, were trying to think of anything else that does that, and I couldn't think of anything else where you get two sounds that run side by side as opposed to one into the other.
Oh, there's plenty of drive pedals that do that.
Are there?
Yeah,
I
can't name anything off the top of my head. I'll tell you what, one that did it was that what was the name of that green pedal we had? The G777. No.
The Green Child.
Green Child had exactly yeah. that. Yeah.
Did it?
Yeah. There are quite a few drive pedals that will do that.
Okay.
But obviously it's the first Boss product that will do it.
Yeah, so, that's weird. Yeah. I couldn't think of anything at the time. But yeah, I thought it was quite neat. And yeah, it's interesting to, you know, this coupled with the guitar that Joe's about to talk about. I think it's interesting that Boss are doing, you know, or Roland are doing, they're going down the route of collaborations.
Yeah, it's, it was, Matt didn't tell any of us.
No, we had no idea.
It was, I only found out when it was on like Premier Guitar or whatever, or Facebook.
It was at Matt's house when we were filming the videos.
Oh yeah, so you've been keeping a little shtum
only
about
because
it,
I so. Opened a box, like a Boss box, because I was like seeing what was in the collection.
And so you're
I was
like, oh.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Did you tell him that you saw it?
Yeah, he had to tell me about it. But then he made me promise not to say anything.
Didn't even tell us. Unbelievable. No. Supposed to be your mate.
Sorry.
Unbelievable. So there was a Strandberg, talking about collaborations,
yeah.
a Strandberg guitar producing collaboration with Boss. What's the deal?
That's cool. Well, it's not the first, the second, or even the third or fourth time that Boss have done collaborations on guitars, but...
Really? What are the other options?
I don't know. We saw them all at the museum.
But they were branded as just Boss, though.
No,
there was the Fender ones.
There's
that's
the
one
that true. Was like GHS.
That's true. That is true, actually.
So, eat stuff.
He's got a bit of a little bit of a short fuse today.
Those other
he?
Ones were Roland. The only other guitar I can think of is the the Fender Strat.
Okay. Do you feel better that you're right now?
Okay. I am always right.
The Strandberg, yeah, was super cool. So of course the last collaboration we have, you're absolutely right. They were all Roland ones. So this is the first Boss branded collaboration. But again, they've gone kind of super niche. Rather than sort of the stuff we'd seen before from Roland, where they're partnering with Fender, they've gone for Strandberg, like super boutique,
yep.
very, very modern, very unique company. Where are Strandberg from there? Like,
they're German, aren't they?
No, I think they are. Doesn't matter. I don't know. But... but yeah, so it's the Bowden model, which is the most popular, really kind of the only Strandberg model. The other models are just sort of, they have scratch plates rather than being rear-mounted, so they have a different name. This is the Strandberg body shape. So it's a headless, fan-fretted, super small, super lightweight, very ergonomically designed guitar, the Strandberg Bowden. What I really like about Strandbergs, which makes them really unique, is the neck profile at the back, which is... like a
square, basically.
Yeah, rectangle. It's square. Yeah, it has sharp edges to the back. The idea being to keep your thumb in perfect form as you sail up and down the neck. So it's also not straight. It's angled. So that square part moves across the neck.
It's asymmetrical, I think, is what you're describing.
Yeah, but it's a totally cool guitar. So this is their collaboration. It's a £4,000 instrument. And they're not making a lot of them, so this is, you know, this is supposed to be super.
But then Strandbergs are usually that kind of money, aren't
That's
they?
That's right. Then? Yeah. Well, yes, they are for their extreme high end. Strandberg have recently introduced like factory line guitars, which are like 2, 1/8, 1/6, that sort of thing. But yes, for their custom shop, this isn't unheard of. Endure neck. That's what the neck profile is called.
Exactly. Because it's Strandberg. Durable.
I would imagine so, but what's cool is they've got these new designed like Boss modeling humbuckers. So the humbuckers can do, you know, single coil humbucking. Watch the video with Alex Hutchins because he demonstrates them really well, because they also do things like bass, sitar, acoustic, and like synth tone. So all the stuff that Roland have been doing for a while in their like GR300, but it's cool that they're all accessible on the guitar as well via sort of rotary controls, which is pretty
It must be triggering the synth, though, surely. Those sounds aren't built into the guitar.
They're built into the pickups, as far as I'm...
No, aware. It must be that the pickups are then... Because it's got a GK pickup built in.
Yeah.
And it must be just triggering the synth. You can change patches on the guitar, on the synth, which is how it's always worked. I don't think there's anything actually built into the guitar. I might be mistaken.
So
but
I think you are, but I could be proved wrong. So when I sat down with it, which, you know, I was hammered, but when I sat down with a £4,000 guitar, I wasn't aware of any pedals going into it other than the Boss JHS thing, and I was going into a little blues cube.
When it was doing like synthy sounds and stuff.
Off of the not synth sounds, but I was changing the tunings off of the rotaries. So there's like a top mounted rotary where you'd find the rhythm treble flick switch on a Gibson.
And it definitely wasn't attached to the synth.
I've no idea. I don't think so. I think this was plugged just in, and I think it was working off of the rotary control there. But what was cool is I was flicking between like the standard tuning, a semitone down, drop D, and I was going right down to like drop C.
I bet you it was plugged into the synth module and you didn't notice, but I'm going to investigate that for next week. Probably. If only Matt was here to tell us.
So I think you're wrong because it is a V guitar.
I think what they're always... Maybe not. I don't know. I need to check.
It runs on AA batteries. Has 4 AA batteries in it.
Yeah, maybe that would do it. Maybe they've
kind
built...
Kind of like how the Variax has
Yeah, maybe
got
they've built the synth
built
stuff
in.
Into
I mean,
the
that's what happened with the VG...
Here we are. Here we are.
Because
Onboard Boss V-Guitar Tech. Boss's famous V-Guitar technologies... blah blah blah. I'm not going to read this. It's very long.
But they're on board.
They're on board.
Okay. Well, interesting. There we go.
Yeah, I'm sure that's happened before. If I remember correctly, the because there was two Fender ones
Roland's,
that came out at the same time.
Yeah,
there was the GK1 and the VG5.
Oh, and that did have sitar stuff built in, didn't it?
So here's the cool.
Yeah, you're right.
That control knob I was talking about is a 6-position control knob, which will allow you standard tuning, E flat, D standard, drop D, drop C sharp or drop C.
You are right. They've
all
done this
on a rotary,
before,
which is really super cool.
Despite you
those
being
are some odd tunings. That doesn't seem like it. Doesn't seem
know.
Like
standard,
enough.
Standard E flat. That's it. Those make sense. D standard.
Yeah,
makes perfect sense. Drop D
completely. But I mean, why wouldn't you put like if you've got the option to put stuff on there? Why wouldn't you put say baritone tuning?
Ah, that's because
or Nashville tuning.
Now that's because it has also on the 5-position mode selector switch. Position 5 will give you hybrid sounds, which is a bass with which you can add. You can tap in and add a 5th and 6th string as well.
So it's an octave down, basically.
Yeah.
But if it's done with the synth stuff, then it'll be modeled track.
Position 5 is you set position 5 and then you can plug it into the GR300 and use it.
Yeah. Okay, that all makes sense then, because basically what it's doing is what those strats were doing. Plus, you can plug it into the synth for more sounds as well.
I mean, this is all completely pointless us talking about it because they're making like 10 of them and they're $4,000, so we're never going
to
see them.
I mean,
we got to see
Matt
him.
Might buy one.
I got to buy one.
Maybe. Yeah.
One's been at Matt's house for ages.
Yeah. Imagine if Matt buys one of those. Ridiculous man. Let's do one last bit of news. Jay, there is a brand new pedal from Keeley. Do you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, so Keeley have announced the Super Fat Mod 16th anniversary. Hand-built germanium edition.
That's a really weird anniversary.
It's a very strange anniversary. Basically, this is just a... Well, I say just. It's a an extension to an existing pedal they do, which is the Super Fat Mod, which, if I remember correctly, please don't sue me, is a Boss BD2 that they modded back in the day, which I think is where the 16th anniversary thing comes from. I think it was one of the first Keeley mod pedals was the BD2. And what they've done is they've added a germanium transistor in there as well to give it a full amp in a box, take a drink style to it. It looks really good. I've watched a couple of videos. It sounds really good. All the Keeley stuff is always very good. Another one of these companies that just keeps plugging away, putting out great stuff.
Churning them out, basically.
Just churning them out. It's cool. The only thing with Keeley is they're kind of like... It's almost like they're bringing out too much, so much stuff that the stuff that they're releasing doesn't get enough of a marketing push behind it. And yeah. so a lot of stuff, unless you're doing what we're doing, which is really keeping an eye out, just seems to slip under the net, which is the only thing. But I guess, you know, maybe you don't need to do loads and loads of promotion on these things because you're Robert Keighley and people love your gear.
I think
they're just going to buy it anyway.
In the UK as well, I don't think there's many retailers that have got them. And obviously in the UK, retailers tend to do a lot of the marketing for brands.
Yeah, I guess so.
If you're not in those stores, then generally you won't get seen as much as someone who isn't in those stores, like, yeah. you know, Earthquaker or
yeah.
whoever, smaller brands that have got a lot of coverage in stores. So there we go.
Yeah,
there we go.
Another cool pedal. It looks great. I'd like to get my hands on one. I think great looking pedal. It's gold sparkle, you know, so obviously.
What could be better?
Absolutely. But yeah, so check that out. Make sure you do.
Excellent. Should we dive headfirst into a big old boozy barrel of
news?
You're a ridiculous man. Do it right.
Question.
There we go. Emma says, hey nerds, I'm considering branching out into a 7-string to expand my playing styles and tackle some more progressive covers. I'm fairly knowledgeable on the old 6-string bits and bobs, prices, value, etc. Current main guitars, Schecter Hellraiser C1FR, PRS Mark Holcomb SE, just to give you peeps an idea of style, budget, feel and neck preference for my usual kind of guitar, melodic rather than chug. But 7-string seems like it might be a different price bracket wise. It's pretty hard to find stuff where I live on the high street to play test. So where is a good place to start brand / budget wise? Any hidden gems out there I should look at? What's to build quality equivalent of my 6-strings? Any tips on getting used to extra strings? Not keen on buying something with no resale value if in 5 years I need to pay rent.
You kind of need to get into the habit of editing these questions down into something that's a bit more.
The thing is, there's all important information there, basically. Yeah. So she's working to a similar budget and a similar style to a Hellraiser C1FR and a PRS Mark Holcomb. So that gives you your price to start off with. 7-strings. She wants something that's more, not necessarily just for like the chug,
okay,
for something a little bit more melodic, and it sounds like something that probably needs to be available in stores rather than, you know, some unique boutique-y custom stuff, I guess. So what are we thinking? What brands are we going to start looking at first?
Well, I mean, okay, so there's a problem. Like when you say sort of looking for melodic stuff and you're looking at 7-strings, as soon as someone says melodic, I think, oh, I need to not look at genty stuff. But 7-strings is such a gent area.
You don't mean gent as in gentleman, you mean degent, the music style.
I mean sort of it's such a metally area. Now that shouldn't put you off 7-strings. I think they can be used for anything. And actually, I think at the lower price point of 7-strings, it's a real... this is a really interesting area because as you move up in price, pickups become active, high output,
yeah,
and that's actually where I think you lose loads of tone options. So kind of at the more entry level of 7-strings, there's some really interesting stuff. If you're playing a Schecter Hellraiser already, then Schecter actually operate, and I do also think if you're just getting into 7-strings, whilst like something like a Mark Holcomb is like a £900 PRS, I do think maybe on a 7, maybe go in a little more entry level. And there are loads of cool entry level stuff at 7-strings. It's difficult to find one badly made. So there's some cool stuff you can try. Actually, Schecter do their C7 Deluxe, which finishes just seem to disappear at the 7-string point. So
you just get black, basically.
Or white, yes, yeah. So the Schecter C7, you have a black or a white option. But they're £319 at the moment for a 7-string Schecter. The C7 is a really similar body shape to the Hellraiser. So, you know, if you wanted to stick with the same thing, I think they're really cool. Basswood bodies, like passive pickups. It's their Diamond Plus, which actually occurs in their 6-string models, in their sort of like their trad style guitars as well, which is pretty cool. I think they're a really good option. And I actually think Schecter do a great job at the low-level price point of really dominating. Probably the most affordable thing at the moment is Jackson do a Dinky, a 7-string Dinky. It's £225. I think it looks cool. I think it's probably the best looking option, to be honest, but I really like the look of Dinkies. So it's a cool entry level seven string to sort of get involved with. Again, it's basswood, and I think you'll find that a lot at this sort of price point. But go on.
I was just going to say, I mean, I don't think Emma's looking for something
super cheap.
No. I mean, the Hellraiser and the Hellraiser C1FR and those Mark Holcomb, as you say, they're about a grand each, you know, so we're not looking cheap and cheerful.
I think Joe was saying was that, you know, if you're not 100% sure that you're going to go all in on the seven string thing, then why spend a grand, you know?
I was just saying that I think there were some really good things kind of around there. I was only sort of going to give a cursory mention to the Dinky, because it is so cheap. Like, that's not a lot of money. Like, if you think about getting into seven string guitars, and I think £225 is an excellent way to sort of start without.
Well, you say that. That's what I did, and I appreciate that this was
nearly 20 years ago.
I would have been 15.
Nearly 20 years ago.
No, not nearly 20 years ago. 15 years ago. Okay. Yeah, because I'm yeah. So it would have been about 15 years ago. I did that. I bought the entry level Ibanez.
Did you get a Korn Monkey?
I didn't get a Korn. No.
RG7321.
Okay, it was an RG7321.
7321.
No, I did want to get a K7, as they were at the time. They weren't individuals. They, of course, now have to go. They can just call it the Monkey because Head plays something else. I think he plays ESP now. Right. But yeah, I wanted a K7, but they were too much money, so I got the entry level one, and it was not great, to be honest.
Didn't stay in tune.
It was, it didn't sound very good, and it you know, and I mean, as it happens, it probably in the long run was for the best because I didn't go down that style of music. But had it been, but the reason I didn't go down that style of music is because it wasn't inspiring to play. I'd pick it up and it just sounded dreadful. By the time I tuned, you know, down all seven strings, the top string was out of tune again.
Imagine if you had done your ska band with that RG7321. That would have been fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, so talking about Ibanez, is there anything on the Ibanez front?
Well, yeah, on Ibanez, actually, if you want to look further sort of up the price point, and I guess we should talk about some of those things, the tastefully named RG Dix 7 MPB-SBB is...
I'd completely forgotten about
that.
The
Dix. Does that mean it's in... SBB will be something brown burst.
It's surreal blue burst.
Oh, okay.
Actually, but yeah, this was a really, the Dix series of RGs was a really interesting series of Ibanez guitars, which were maple necked, and they all had like a quilt top, but then the nature of the cutaways on the front of the body would cut back to the body wood underneath. And it always looked really good. These come with like the Nitro Wizard 7 neck, popular neck profile for Ibanez, and it's like a three-piece maple Babinga maple neck profile. Features-wise, they're totally cool. Like, they come with Damasio Fusion Edge humbuckers in the neck and bridge. Like, the maple neck, the finish looks remarkable, and they're like £750. I really think they're like, for that sort of money, we could easily be saying this guitar's £1,800 and I would be listing the same features. So I think Ibanez have done a really good job. If you want something a bit more traditional, which I don't know if she does.
Well, before you go down that route, I think actually Ibanez do a whole load of very cool signature models for around that sort of money. There's the Jake Bowen, who's the geezer from Periphery.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a very cool, quite tasteful-looking seven string.
That is cool.
Yeah, isn't it? So it's a matte black finish, but with gold. And I normally shy away from anything
gold.
But
it's like old gold.
Yeah, it's like a dull gold Damasio pickups and a gold logo. And it's a reverse headstock. I think that looks really cool. That's £900. There's a Steve Vai for just over £1,100 that, you know, is maybe a bit more traditional looking. You've got the Floyd green pickup, so not for everyone.
That's like the entry level universe model.
Yeah, and again, Damasio Blaze on there, and same Wizard 7 neck on that. And the aforementioned Monkey, of course. has got a very cool and again fairly conservative looking HS combination, but it comes tuned to A, you know,
course.
So you can play blind whenever you want to.
Yeah.
And yeah, but yeah, I think there's some good.
There is a lot on the market that's really cool, yeah. And I think Emma mentioned that they needed to be things that she could play on the high street, and I think we've kept it within pretty yeah. major brands here. ESP actually do their version of the Tele, which is the TE series for them. They do a 7-string version of that.
Those look really good.
Yeah, exactly. I like those because they're just a bit more tasteful, a bit less sort of all out metal.
If you want to go down that route as well, there's a Charvel Pro Mod.
There is. Yeah,
7-string. Again, just cool, fairly simple looking. Unsurprisingly,
that's the one that I would go for out of that lot because it looks like a telly.
Yeah.
But I think if Emma's got, you know, like a PRS and the Schecter already, she's maybe looking to get something different. That might be an option.
I think it's cool and it's not a load of money. They're, you know, sub 800 quid.
Those Charvel guitars are wicked as well. Since they brought them back, the quality's been very high for the price you pay. I think, nice little guitar. How much are they?
£800.
Nice.
Coil split in the pickups.
That's the thing, it's not going to be too chuggy either because it's, you know, it's passive pickups.
Actually, it's quite interesting. So you've got a Seymour Duncan Nazgul. You right?
You right, Joe?
You've got a Seymour Duncan Nazgul and a Sentient, but they're both coil splittable, which I think is really nice. So, you know, you can probably get that really sweet Telecaster twang right out of the single coil of your Seymour Duncan Nazgul.
Stop saying Seymour, you've broken Joe's brain.
I don't know.
There we go. So with that, we are up at time. I hope that answers the question, Emma. That's we don't normally delve into the metal stuff, and actually that's been a bit of an eye-opener, even though we've only talked about it for 5-10 minutes. I kind of forgot, and those Charvel Pro Mods, hadn't even seen that they existed.
Yeah.
They're the best of the bunch, I reckon. We are going to go over and do our extra half an hour of Patreon content. We asked you to vote in the Facebook group what you wanted us to talk about, and inspired by the Boss and JHS collaboration, we are going to do dream pedal collaborations over on Patreon. Patreon.com/guitar nerds. Where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $5 a month gets you the extra half an hour. And like I said, this week we are discussing dream pedal collaborations. But you also get access to every extra half an hour that we've ever done. Plus the mini series that we've done, Joe Branton's Rant On, plus all the interviews as well. Interviews ranging from, we did the founder of Line 6 right through to the internet's own Mary Spender, right through to the guys behind Earthquaker Devices. So lots of stuff to listen to on there. You can also go in at the $10 a month tier, which means you get your name read out on the main show like this.
Do 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 do.
Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Steve Merkel, Blair Tom, Scarlett Manager, Mark Ross, Teddy Shaw, Danny McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Gorgon, Jack Godfrey, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quine, Phil Thompson, Roy Anstis, Smooth Gravit, Connell Anderson.
Ocean Drive. I don't think that was Ocean Drive, I think that was the other one.
Yeah, I don't know what you
lifted.
Did.
Lifted, it was.
Lifted.
Lifted. Oh, you and I together, baby. Lifted.
Is this a John Mayer song?
Oh, we could be lifted.
Are you doing John Mayer?
We could be lifted.
There we go. You can also join the conversation facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum.
Forum.
Lots of stuff to
don't go to that one.
Lots of stuff to talk about on there. You can follow us on Twitter @GuitarNerds, on Instagram @GuitarNerds. Head over to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/guitar nerds videos. This week going up, we're doing videos every Friday. This week going up is our full tour of the.
Unless it's Joe's turn.
It's not. It's Mark's turn.
No, I'm just saying.
All right.
You've just totally scared him then. He just turned completely white. This week, the video going up is our full tour of the Boss exhibition. So if you want to see all that weird stuff that we talked about, it's all on there. The largest Boss and Roland collection in the world, it seems, or for the guitar stuff. I think it was every single Boss and Roland guitar product.
It was very good. I think Matt did a great job, and thank you, Matt.
Yeah, and so join us next week as well, because it is Matty's last one before he moves to Japan. He's going to be his last podcast episode, and then he's gone for 3 months, basically. So, yeah, do join us. It's going to be a big one. I think I'll be a bit sad, actually, not to see him, really, for 3 months.
Really?
I was really hoping, Joe would go.
Yeah.
Nope.
I think when we do the next...
I'm a lifer.
When we do the next poll, we should be, who would you want to see ejected? Maybe we just run... Why don't we run this like Big Brother, where every month or so, one of us has to go?
Well, how about this? We... So there's going to be some special guests joining us whilst Matt is away. And maybe at the end, once Matt's back, we can run two... two back-to-back polls. One, who's your favourite guest?
Oh, yeah.
And two, who's your least favourite member of Guitar Nerds?
And why is it Joe Branton?
I'm totally up for this. I'm totally actually up for watching everyone else being voted off of this podcast except for me.
Imagine if it was just all the votes were for you and then all three of us got 0%.
Which is what would happen.
I could just
see, that is what would happen.
And that would be horrible.
Day 8 at the Big Brother house. Everybody else has left because Joe Brennan is so bloody obnoxious.
Joe's gone feral and he is squirting squirty cream into his mouth and running around saying, "I'm crazy." That's the sort of thing you do.
Joe Brennan is trying to eat the dirt from the potted plants because he thought that it might be hemp.
Joe Brennan has pulled one of the chickens out of the nest and has bitten its head off, even though he is a vegan. With that, we should call it a night. We will see you next week. Join us for Matty's last show before he heads off to Japan. Thanks very much. We'll see you next week.
Cheers, gang.
Bye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.